Welcome to Cinema Savants, your weekly dose of movie news, movie reviews, and the occasional rumor, with your hosts, Todd Vandenberg and Rob Steele.
And coming up in this week's show, Oscar predictions and stuff like twin beds. We'll get to that later. Lots of Marvel news and a movie that might just be worse than the emoji one. We are, of course, this week joined by Lee Vowell, who I'm going to have to put in the opening credits at some point. But first, just to further complicate Fu Man Todd's emotions, check out the website. It'll make sense. Question for you. If Black Panther and Storm from the X-Men actually had kids, would they be considered Thundercats? Just starting out the show with something I saw this week and went, oh, that's a good
beautiful
question. I don't know.
That's
which
beautiful
one would be Snarf. Anyway, leads to the Avengers, which it finally got moved up to April 27th, which is when it's being released to the rest of the planet. Now, they said that they just wanted to move it up so it would give it more time and not run into the Deadpool movie or the Han Solo movie, which both come out in May. I think it has a lot to do with piracy, because amazingly enough, if you release the movie in the country that it came from at the same time as the rest of the freaking planet, they won't pirate it as much, I'm thinking. What do you guys have thoughts on that?
Yeah, I'm thinking it's three things. I think exactly what you said. Maybe they finally realized, oh, maybe we should make it day and date around the world to eliminate. Well, doesn't eliminate that, but helps with that problem. Also, the Deadpool solo issue gives them an extra week. And maybe they have a movie in release right now that taught them, oh, you know what? We don't really have to have releases around holidays. Although, you know, movies can make money whenever they come out, as long as they're good movies and people want to see them. So I think that has a lot to do with it as well.
It just makes sense to me. But actually, other, you know, you're referencing the Black Panther movie, had an odd story come out this week. Well, odd to me, because it's not something I had given much thought about. A guy named Niall DeMarco talked about how he tried to go see the Black Panther movie, but had to leave because he's deaf. Which, and that's the headline for this story, which confused me. So I thought, it can't be too loud. What is going on here? He's talking about the closed captioning system that they have at theaters with apparently a device that is given so they can read the captions as they come across. And he said he can read enough lips to know that it was wrong. And it was also very oddly configured. You have to attach it to the chair and it has to sit right in front of you, blocking part of the screen. And like I said, you know, not being deaf, it's not something I had given a lot of thought to. But do you guys think we could have like a closed caption screening of movies?
You know, I can't hear anything you're saying. What are you saying?
You're such an evil person. Why not?
I
mean, it would make perfect sense. And plus, there are these things on phones called apps, right? And I understand they don't want the little bright little screen, but I mean, there's a bright little screen in front of the people, right? Otherwise, how are they possibly seeing the captions? Why don't they just make it an app and put it on your phone? The problem of him saying it not matching their lips, that always happens. Closed captions rarely match exactly what is being said.
Well, was he saying it wasn't matching the lips, or was he saying it, the words that
the,
he could
the words
see them
didn't
saying
match?
Okay,
it's like someone
different
would say, "Hi, my name is Steve," and it'd come out as Blargelsving Farkenstein Barg Sot.
just Swedish for something.
Yeah. Okay, so that's just a total error in the processing. But
right.
Yeah, closed captions are hardly ever word for word. Just because they would be flying so quickly through, they're not going to do it.
As long as sorry to cut you off. As long as it's not the closed captioning where it's like you're watching it and they're typing it as it's being said, and it's like there's so many typos, and it's like, I have no idea. I saw this in the outline. I was like, you know, I've never really thought about, because we are all fortunate enough to be able to hear, and I don't mean that you know, yeah, dismissively. I mean the truth. But it's, I've never thought about going to see a film where I couldn't hear it. So I don't know what that experience would be like. That's really interesting.
It's something I always thought that, you know, if you can't hear, why would you go? But at the same time, you know, why would you not if you can have something like this? So it's like I never think of deaf people watching television, and yet I know closed captioning exists.
I wonder if it maybe was just a malfunction of that particular unit, because that certainly happens, you know, as opposed to there was a problem with the captioning for the film. I mean, they closed captioning at movie theaters, this type of system, that's been around for years now.
Yeah. Is it something where they could, like, plug in their earphones and hear it? Oh, wait, never mind.
Wow.
There are approximately 1 million people in the U.S. that are deaf, according to Gallaudet, which should know. I don't really see that it would be that much of an issue to have closed caption screenings. They're not going to do that for every film, because a lot of people are going to be, get that off of there. Although Black Panther had a lot of captions on it as it was.
I'm thinking you can have since the movie doesn't actually usually take up the entire actual screen, put it under the picture.
Right.
That way it's not blocking anything for people who can hear, I guess.
Yeah. That kind of makes me sad for people who can't hear it, actually, you know, because I'd never thought of it. And it's like, you know, a movie going experience, obviously, is something we all three love. And to be able to really not have that due to simply not being able to hear, it's kind of a sad experience in a way. You know, having to have watch it on, unless you have a great stereo system, or stereo, quote unquote, you know, unless you have a home system where you can watch something big. Sorry, that was no pun intended on that. But something you can watch the movie really big on TV and then watch the captions. You know, it seems like it'd be, there's got to be, well, it sounds like a joke, but there's got to be an app for that. So, But again, you know, you get, as Todd mentioned, you know, going to the movie theater. Well, I'll be answer. So Friday I went to the movies, and the person I went to the movies with had her phone on for 2 seconds, it felt like. And the lady next to us came over. Hey, can you turn that off? It's pretty bright. So I don't know if even in that case, you know, they're having to read it on their phone. I don't know how much of a detriment it would be to anybody else in the theater.
But it's not going to be any different from the little screen from the device that they hand to you. I mean, it's just a black screen with, like, white type.
Well, I mean, it wouldn't be that bright. African-American screen. Let's not be racist.
Yeah, that's true. You're accurate. You know, and we've seen, well, Rob doesn't go see foreign films because he's a jingo.
I've seen foreign films the past 3 weeks.
When you go see foreign films, there's captions. Yeah. So it's not like this is anything different from that kind of experience. So that would be nice if they would do that.
Other than whoever else is paying for the film, I'm assuming would have to see the captions, right?
Yeah, and then that's why I said I wouldn't do it for everything, because some people are going to be irritated by it. But like my son, Alex, not your daughter, Alex, he likes watching films with captions because it's easier for him to process reading than the auditory. So he would enjoy it. I mean, a lot of people, more people than just the deaf population, actually would benefit from that. So
it would save us a lot of trouble with the, what the hell did he just say? Oh, there it is, written on the screen.
Back it up. Oh, wait, I can't. I'm at the movie theater. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's quite true. When people are talking during explosions on the screen, or people are laughing uproariously in the theater, which is what you want, but then you miss lines. That happens. If the movie's good, that happens a lot.
Yeah. Get to the chopper. I wonder if they'd spell that differently. So. Anyway,
I'm sure they would.
That's back to Marvel stuff. Are either of you guys still watching Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.?
I have not watched this entire season yet. I thought I would just binge it as it comes to, apparently.
That may be a good idea. They're coming up on the 5th season finale. And the writers are setting it up to be the series finale.
That is what I've heard.
We don't know if it actually is or not, because it could, you know, they could go through all of this and it's renewed. Oh crap! Make new storylines. I've seen them do that on shows before, Star Trek. So I guess we have very few comments on that since we've all kind of decided to binge it at the end of the season on, what is it, on Netflix or Hulu? Something like that?
Netflix.
Anyway, other Marvel news, because there just seems to be a lot of it this week. Fox, who is not completely gobbled up by Disney, is planning two more X-Men films and a Silver Surfer film. In addition to the Doctor Doom and Kitty Pryde movies. Holy crap, can we just wait till Disney finishes eating you? No, absorbing you, whatever it's going to be, and let them do it. That way we can do an X-Men movie that makes sense.
It's like they're in a rush to make more mediocre films at best.
Well, make more money, right? That's really what it comes down to, I'm assuming. If they get these pushed out.
Oh, yeah, totally.
The one thing that came out with this story that didn't make a lot of sense to me, the New Mutants movie, which, if you know the comics, is a spinoff of the X-Men, and now the rest of you know it too, was supposed to come out this month. But it got pushed back until like next February or something because they're going back to do additional photography. However, what is leaked is they're adding a character to the movie.
Oh my gosh.
I was going to say, additional photography is not a reason to push a movie back 11 months.
How do you... I mean, this is a movie that was finished. You know, special effects done, everything, ready to go. Nope, we're pushing it back. Because how do you add a character at that point?
Shoot a lot of scenes.
Everybody come back, sit where you... No, you were sitting there that time.
Yeah.
Well, unless he's a narrator, that's the only thing that would really make sense, which would make no sense, of course, if there was a narrator. But at least then you could kind of see where, I agree. I don't know how you add a character.
Steve went to the laundry room.
Exactly, yeah. Alec Baldwin is the voice of the narrator.
They're going Blade Runner with it. I'm sorry, that's Alex Baldwin, sir. It's not Alec. God. Alex. What's wrong with you?
For people who don't know what Todd is talking about,
I'm dying.
Trump tweeted out our great and former president tweeted out Alex Baldwin when he was trying to make a derogatory statement about Alec Baldwin.
As he's ranting about someone who makes fun of him, while he has yet to address the fact that Putin put out a video showing missiles hitting Florida. Fun. Anyway,
back to it was cartoonish. It wasn't real. You know,
it was like identify more with it.
It was like a Tarantino film with the violence. It wasn't real.
Oh, my God. Anyway.
Cloak and Dagger is going to be coming out on June 7th. See, I'm back at Marvel News.
really like that with Trump presidency, the Marvel News.
Cloak and Dagger.
It's
what
Presidents
should be doing instead of tweeting. They came out with another trailer, and I think this looks like a good series. I mean, they were always secondary characters that I was partially interested in, you know, and I don't have to buy the book, so I'll watch the series.
It's a cool concept. I hope it's good.
I hope it comes out nice. There was a Twitter thing this week. See, I should have gone straight to this because of the president. And it might have gotten somebody a role in a movie. Somehow, and there's a long story behind this, so find it online. I'll just give you the short form. Mark Hamill and James Gunn got to talking on Twitter, and it might end up getting Mark Hamill a role in Guardians of the Galaxy 3. It seemed to be like a kidding conversation of, oh, yeah, we should do that. Yeah, we really should. And then they went, maybe we really should direct message me here, and we'll get this off of main feed Twitter. Who would he be?
The Joker.
Oh, of course.
That would be awesome.
we're gonna buy Warner's just so we can have Mark Hamill play the Joker.
this is the voice, though.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, they could make him up to look like the Joker. But oh my God, that's awesome news. Regardless of who the hell he plays, I think that's fantastic.
As long as it's not David Hasselhoff's role from the last one.
As long as it's not David Hasselhoff. Mark Hamill is David Hasselhoff.
I mean, Hamill has done, obviously, you know, for people who, like us, have kind of stayed up with his work, and he's done a lot of voice work. But I think one of the things, if people haven't really noticed that, you know, Mark Hamill is a young Luke Skywalker. I thought his role in the most recent Star Wars film, he was great in it. Was it exactly what he thought it should be or not? No, but I mean, as good as he was in that film, I thought it kind of, as far as people, young people maybe noticing him more, I think it really helped his career. I think it kind of rebooted it. So I think, you know, him being Guardians of the Galaxy, or he was the thread in Phantom Thread for people. Just, he was the spool. It was amazing. But it was, yeah, I mean, I think it's good I thought the last Star Wars and anything Mark Hamill was in, really, I'm interested in watching it.
Yeah, you're right. He was Flash excellent.
TV series.
Yeah.
Well,
he's playing the trickster.
Most things he's in.
Most things.
He was the beer in Ironweed. It was amazing. It was crazy.
It's a huge role.
Oh, boy. Yeah. Last Marvel news, of which there seems to have been too much this week. The Captain Marvel movie, which is not the Shazam movie. That's DC. And the problem with both groups having a character with the same freaking name. Screenwriter Geneva Robertson. Too many consonants in that last bit. Sorry. She says it's going to be more of an action comedy movie. Does that worry you guys? Because it worries me.
Doesn't worry.
This is supposed to be part of the series, and the rest of, you know, apart from Ant-Man.
Thor Ragnarok. Doesn't worry me a bit.
Okay.
No, it doesn't me either, because there's a lot of. Unless
humor,
they're just using
but
that term.
Not necessarily comedies.
Right. Excellent point. Yeah. But I mean, unless they're just using that term, and it's still just going to be this kind of thing. But unless they're intentionally, like Ant-Man, it really should be a comedy action film. But maybe it's that kind of thing. If it's done well enough, if it's done well enough, any film can work. But if it's not done, then it becomes Ironweed 2, which is awful.
That would be fun. And think of it this way: it's Marvel. If partway through the film they see it's not working, guess who won't be on the screenplay anymore? Guess what will be changed? I mean, they'll change it if it's not working. So I don't have any worries about that at all.
Let's see. We do have a bit of casting news from that movie. Gemma Chan is set to play Captain Minerva, which I'm sure is supposed to be a pun of somehow, who is the Kree are an alien race. Okay, for those of you who don't know, she's playing a Kree geneticist who's supposed to be the bad guy in this movie. It's Captain Minerva. Wonderful. Which leads us right into the news from the new Wonder Woman movie, where the bad guy is Barbara Ann Minerva. It works. Who is actually Cheetah. Her we know. Barbara Ann Minerva, I don't think most people know yet. They had originally wanted Emma Stone, who said, no, I'm not going to do it. So Kristen Wiig is the front runner for Cheetah, which I think is kind of an odd casting, but hey.
Action comedy. Is kind of odd casting, and she can do more than comedies, so, not a problem there. But Cheetah at least is a well-known character. The Captain Marvel villain kind of worries me a bit. Just because
it's going to be a funnier movie.
It's not a well-known villain, but
name a well-known villain for Captain Marvel.
And that's what I was just going to say. Thanos. Yeah, so that's kind of an issue there. But I'm sure it will work. I'm not too concerned about that. And I like the fact that they're bringing in Cheetah for Wonder Woman. I think that's very cool. Because frankly,
I think apart from Joker, that's going to be the best super villain DC has had in a movie so far.
Yeah,
so it wasn't Luthor.
Yeah,
and the cameo by Deathstroke doesn't count.
No, it doesn't.
Other DC news. The CW Seed, which is apparently their online streaming service, has finally put March 24th as the date of the Constantine animated series starting. Which is still being voiced by Matt Ryan, but I want a live version again. Because that was a good series.
That was a good series.
I had no idea the Falcons quarterback did any voice work, but that's interesting.
Well, it's because he yells at the tight end so often. Sounds like spells. Other CW news. The Heathers series, which just looked weird to begin with to me, got pushed back because of the school shootings in Florida. Although, and I'm not trying to be crass or anything, but if that was the reason, this show is never going to air because there's always going to be a school shooting until they finally do something about the guns.
Yeah, that's true. You know, and Death Wish was pushed back because it was supposed to come out after right around the time soon after the Las Vegas shooting, and it was pushed back. And oh, look when Death Wish came out. You're right. I mean, push it back for eternity because nothing's going to change. You know, hopefully it will this time, but.
Right. Clearly, it's probably just an excuse that the series is not going to be any good, and they're just trying to push it back to make changes to it.
Maybe they're adding another character. There you go. Jinx!
Well, Matt Ryan does all the voices.
You mentioned... Okay, so a Jinx, right? That goes into the PSA for this week.
Woo!
It's kind of a movie review, but no, it's a jinxed PSA. I accidentally saw a movie this week called The 5-Year Engagement.
Accidentally.
With Jason Segel and Emily Blunt. And let me be blunt. I watched this in my mechanic's waiting room.
Okay.
There's two TVs, sense. And it was either this or Fox News, so I chose what I thought would be the lesser of two evils.
Wow.
It's got a fairly good cast. You know, Jason Segel, Emily Blunt, Chris Pratt was in it because it's the obligatory Chris. And lots of stars that I don't know the names of, but I go, hey, it's a dude from this and the girl from that and the group from the commercial and, you know, them. After that, see, that's the good part of the movie. The rest of it, when I got home, I did some research, and the first thing I looked up was whether or not what I was watching was supposed to be a comedy.
Wow, that's nice.
And the answer was yes, and I consider that a shame because I found absolutely nothing funny about the movie. My middle daughter, the one in high school, was with me at the time, and she asked if this is what comedy was becoming, and if so, is her generation really that screwed? Ouch. Basically, the storyline is Jason Segel proposes to Emily Blunt, and things go wrong from there. Like Jason wandering off naked, falling asleep in the snow, and losing a toe to frostbite. Or Jason's brother Chris Pratt shooting Emily Blunt in the thigh with a crossbow. Let's see, so what did I get from this movie? Because that's something you have to look for. What did I get from it? I got a variety of styles of facial hair never to even try considering.
Nice.
On Emily Blunt alone, right?
Oh, yeah.
Please, yeah.
Wow. If there were funny parts of the movie, they were drowned out by the coffee maker in the waiting room.
That's bad when the coffee maker is better.
That's why this is a PSA. Avoid this movie at all cost. It may be worse than the Emoji Movie.
Did either of you ever hear of this film?
Yes, I have heard of it. I haven't seen it, but I have heard of it.
I'd never heard of it. Judd Apatow produced it.
I had seen the poster wander by when I scroll through movies that have come out, and that's about it.
It's interesting. It's got a 63% tomato meter from the critics, 51% audience score, 6.2 on IMDb. Yeah, there's a lot of sick people out there, basically. I mean,
I think they got that just on the cast. They would go, look, Chris Pratt's in it. Give it a star.
Well, as soon as you said Jason, I was like, no, I'm not interested. I think he's the least funny freaking person on the planet.
It would be a lot funnier if it was Steven Seagal instead of Jason Seagal.
I would much rather watch Steven Seagal in a romantic comedy because I think that would be really off-putting and weird, and it would make me laugh. He is not funny at all. He sucks. I would rather watch two Adam Sandler movies back to back than him.
Oh gosh, don't say that. I was titillated when you said Emily Blunt's thigh.
It had a crossbow bolt sticking out of it, but. Whatever turns you on, Lee.
Interesting.
Wow. I'll take it.
Okay.
In a small twin bed.
We're going to have to explain that joke at some point, but
no,
I'm going to explain it later. Thank you very much. Thanks.
No. Never explain it. Never.
F7 shoe.
Exactly.
Okay, so Francis Lawrence, who is a guy who directed Hunger Games and Red Sparrow and other stuff, he's going to be doing Battlestar Galactica on the big screen. There is absolutely no word yet as to whether it will be the 1978 version where most of the cast is already dead, or 2004 where most of the cast seems to have disappeared after that show ended. Or if it's something new entirely, which would you guys like to see?
New entirely. Kind of.
It's actually a good question because we're all old enough to have watched the original, which was, of course, it was cheesy, but it was good.
I liked it.
Yeah, I did too. And then the latter series was actually really well made. So as long as... What's that?
But depressing.
Well, yeah, but it was still well made.
It was still
made.
Really well done. It was just kind of, oh, they killed fill in the blank this week. And I liked fill in the blank. But yeah.
As long as it has Mark Hamill doing a voiceover for Edward James Olmos, I'm good.
Matt Ryan as all of the Cylons.
And Lou Diamond Phillips shows up as the student at the end who's causing all the trouble. It's great.
Wow. Okay, something else we all liked. Oh, boy. So we all like Star Wars. We mentioned that earlier.
We all like Star Wars.
Have any of us watched Star Wars Rebels?
I have not.
See, same here. So the only news I can have for that is the series ends tomorrow.
Oh, better binge.
Better binge. But it's being replaced on the Disney Channel. Well, actually, it's on a different Disney Channel that they're making this. The Rocketeer. You guys remember The Rocketeer?
Oh, yeah. Fun movie.
I thought it was a pretty good movie. Yeah. But they're turning it into a TV series on Disney Junior. And this is what worries me. It's the demographic. Because they said they're aiming this series at the 2 to 7 age group.
Yeah, that's kind of odd.
That's a very weird age group to be aiming The Rocketeer at.
That does seem to be a little unusual to make The Rocketeer and
make it that cartoonish.
Yeah, I thought, oh, that's so cool. They're doing The Rocketeer, and it's like, huh. Okay, Elmo as The Rocketeer. Actually, Elmo's probably too advanced. So, yeah, that's kind of sad. I mean, good for the 2 to 7 year olds of the world. They'll have fun, hopefully.
Elmo is in the middle of one of those Me Too lawsuits. I'd like to be making that up. Kevin Clash had a thing, and that's why he's not doing it anymore.
Yeah.
Which leads us into the Weinstein Company being bought.
Thank God.
I'm trying to figure out who it was bought by, because I keep seeing there's several names attached to this.
I'm assuming Disney.
I was just thinking, of course it's Disney. Gotta be, can it? Gotta be.
It's to be an investment team led by Maria Contreras Sweet and backed by billionaire Ron Burkle.
Ron Howard.
I don't know either of those names, so hey, you bought a movie company. Good luck with it. Which goes on to the news about Lionsgate, who keeps making movies, and they announced this week, boy, would we like to be bought by somebody. Which I think is a really bizarre announcement to make.
Hello, Disney.
Well, Hasbro apparently almost bought them sometime in the past year, but that deal fell through, and then Starz was going to buy them, and that fell through, and Summit Entertainment, and that fell through. So, somebody buy them. It'll make them happy.
Yeah, need a major player. Come on, Disney. Or Harvey Weinstein, and he can destroy them.
Lionsgate used to make really good films. I can't recall if I've seen, maybe I have seen a Lionsgate film recently, but Lionsgate was, it was almost like Sony Classics there for a while. I mean, it was, had quality to its name, really, but
yeah,
I have no idea where it is at this point. It could be making whatever.
Soft porn.
Soft porn.
Harvey Weinstein.
Hard-boiled porn?
Hard-boiled. If they remade Hard-boiled, that would be interesting.
Hard-boiled. excellent movie.
MoviePass.
All about the five-minute egg.
You can go see it with MoviePass, who is... They started a lawsuit this week. I don't know if you guys saw this. They're going after cinema,
yeah,
which is spelled differently. The difference between the two, MoviePass, you can go see any standard 2D movie one a day for $9.95 a month. Cinema allows you to see two movies a month, but you can use it to see 3D and IMAX movies. They're claiming that cinema stole their idea. I don't know, Todd, you're our expert in this area.
What they said is that actually they stole some of their software. that it was more direct than just the concept of a subscription service. I mean,
what software were they using? It's a credit card.
Just the...
Shouldn't Visa jump in and go, hey, you stole our...
The fact that when you log in, when you get close to the theater, you log in, you have to be within a certain distance. And I mean, that's part of what they claim that they stole. So, I mean, and if that's true, then obviously they should win. I doubt that they're particularly worried about the competition, because like you said, it's two movies a month as opposed to 30 or 28 or 31. I mean, so, and once every 4 years, you get 29 movies.
29.
But yeah, there was another story about MoviePass that was another complaint saying that some people couldn't see Red Sparrow in some locations. And that, okay, well,
those are AMC theaters.
Interesting. Yeah, and it might have been. And I checked my thing. It's like, oh, yeah, I can go see Red Sparrow. So the number of negative stories about MoviePass just cracks me up, because I think that it's got to be plants from probably AMC, because they're appearing to be the only chain that doesn't like it. Very weird. You know, they're not paying us money. They should at this point. My God, we talk about them every week.
And Hayao Miyazaki too. He should be paying us.
Yeah, oh my God, he should be. He owes us big bucks. Maybe he and MoviePass can co-host. Anyway, yeah, they should win the suit, and then this other little company will go away. And I can't imagine they're going to make a lot of money. I mean, $9.95 for two movies a month. Who cares? That's, I mean, if people love the MoviePass concept the way they should, they would have 50 million subscribers instead of two. So, you know, a lot of people just aren't going to get into that. And there are other competitors out there, but most of them, it's one or two movies a month. And it's just, that's kind of silly.
Yeah, I don't think people are not understanding MoviePass are idiots at this point.
Yeah.
Because it's too good to be true. And you know it's going to change soon. It's got to. But I mean, seeing a movie a day.
Exactly. You know, just don't get the year subscription, because if they do go under, well, then you're out. But if you go month by month, it's like, okay, that's your fault if you didn't watch 1.5 movies before they went out. They went under this month. So
yeah.
And some people have been complaining that, they canceled my MoviePass, and then they find out, because you were buying concessions with it, or you know, trying to buy other things with it. It's like, it strictly says what you're supposed to buy with it.
I can't buy tobacco products with my MoviePass.
Yeah.
Oh, darn.
A movie a day for every day of the month. I mean, I know it's like they don't like you to double up on movies and IMAX and 3D, but I mean,
you can't. They're actually grayed out. The selection.
Right. That's what I'm saying. I mean, I know you can't do that with MoviePass, but it's like if you love seeing movies, you mentioned a movie and a half, but if you go see five movies a month or four movies a month, you go once a weekend. I mean, you've already paid for it. It's this amazing deal that you know is going to change, and it's too good to be true. So if people don't have a MoviePass already, we're not getting paid by MoviePass, but you should definitely sign up for your own benefit.
Yeah.
You know, and do monthly deals.
And it lets you to go see films that I'm not really sure about this one. And like, well, okay, I already paid for it. I might as well. If you got the time.
Best picture.
Yeah. So it's just going to.
They're all good, by the way. So.
All right.
They're all good.
We'll get there in a minute.
They're all good.
They're all. Yeah. We're going to start chanting that in a minute. Bizarre casting news, and this goes back to the last couple of shows, because I mentioned Melanie Diaz being cast in Charmed. They announced some more this week. Sarah Jeffrey is going to be playing Madison, one of the sisters in the movie. Rupert Evans is going to be Harry, the white lighter in the series. And in this announcement, they still announced that Melanie Diaz is playing an undisclosed sister. How...
Maybe that's the character's name.
It could be.
Undisclosed.
this is Madison, this is Sylvia, and this is undisclosed.
It's pretty bizarre.
Maybe it's undisclosed sister. Maybe every time they reference undisclosed sister, or they have to actually say what her name is. Kind of like Robert Jordan.
Well, it's like Hemingway. She who shall not be named.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's always Robert Jordan with Hemingway. It's not just Robert or Jordan. It's undisclosed sister in this one.
It's Matt Ryan. okay, British actress Perdita Weeks is filling in a role that I said didn't exist last week. And I'm wrong. I apologize.
Wrong.
Perdita Weeks is playing Higgins in the new Magnum PI series.
Mm. Well, there you go.
I'm sure she's going to look very odd with the mustache, but okay. Whatever.
Is it because they thought the series was too male-centric and they needed a larger female role? That's got to be the only reason, right?
Were there any female roles in the original version?
Yeah, in the opening sequence, where he's teaching the lady how to swim and you see her butt right there.
Yeah, okay. That's not so much a role as it is a bun.
I thought it was the best role.
Lovely, lovely.
Bun.
Thank you. Well played. I'll be here for the rest of the show.
Well played.
Simon Kinberg is responsible for a lot of the pre-show talk. He's closed a deal to remake Logan's Run, only Logan this time is going to be a woman.
Logan's Run. That's excellent.
Yeah. Sure, why not? Other cast news we had. Chris Hemsworth is going to be the lead in Men in Black 4, which has no Tommy Lee Jones. It has no Will Smith. Basically, it's set in London and being directed by F. Gary Gary Gray. Gray Gary Gary.
I'm assuming.
Captain Dyslexia, thank you.
I'm assuming he's going to be the goofball agent as opposed to the...
I got to be honest. When I saw this outline, I totally misread that. I thought you were making a baseball reference that there were four men left on base. I had no idea what you're talking about. MIB.
That is clever and something only the Orioles would do. The live action Dora the Explorer movie is coming out on August 2nd, 2019.
Mark Hamill playing Dora?
I don't know. It's set several years after the TV series. This worries me.
No.
When Dora is a teenager living in the city with her cousin Diego. And I think that's cheating, because if you're going to make a live-action Dora the Explorer movie, it damn well better have Boots the Monkey, Isa the Iguana, Benny the Bull, and the Big Red Frickin' Chicken.
That being said, I foresee this movie winning an award,
actually. That would be a Razzie. Which, those awards happened, and I missed them. Sorry. But I can tell you who won what. The Emoji Movie led everyone with 4 wins, if you want to call them that. For Worst Movie, Worst On-Screen Duo, Worst Director, and Worst Screenplay. 50 Shades Darker won 2 awards for Kim Basinger, Worst Supporting Actress, and Worst Sequel. The Mummy got Tom Cruise for Worst Actor. Daddy's Home 2 got Worst Supporting Actor with Mel Gibson. And Boo, A Madea Halloween, Tyler Perry as Worst Actress.
Nice. Well played, Razzies. Well played.
It's weird that their website says that Baywatch got an award, but didn't list it, and that Madea's Halloween didn't get an award. So I have no idea what to make of that.
You're confused.
I just work here. I don't know. But that leads us to what I think we'll be talking about the rest of the show. That would be the Oscars. And I actually have 2 questions to lead this off. I watched The Shape of Water this week, which I liked. I thought it was a great movie. It just reminded me a lot of E.T., except that it wasn't an alien with an extendable neck. It was the creature from the Black Lagoon with an extendable happy stick. Which made me wonder, what made this movie, or any movie really, so much better than E.T.? Because E.T. wasn't nominated for Best Picture, but this was. And I'm wondering what the difference is. I mean, is it the sex? did Drew Barrymore have to sleep with a little brown thing with the extendable neck to make it Oscar worthy? I mean, yes, it was better acted than E.T. and everything, and I know it's a much better movie than E.T. was. But what made this movie worthy? I think you just
hit on it.
If it is the romance, why wasn't The Big Sick nominated? Because I actually prefer The Big Sick to The Shape of Water.
I've seen all the Best Picture nominees, but I've seen The Big Sick, which was an entertaining film. I just didn't think it had the gravitas that Shape of Water had. I thought it was a little bit slight. I thought the acting was really good. I just didn't think it was like tried to elevate itself to being something great other than what it was.
Based on a true story, which I'm really hoping Shape of Water wasn't.
Oh no, it's totally, totally true story. I lived it myself. But I just think I was the fish. But The Big Sick, it was just... to me, The Big Sick was... It was too long. Like, there was a point where, first of all, they had the relationship, and then they had her getting sick, which I felt was a little bit too played. And then at the end, you knew everything was going to work out, and he was going to be doing the stand-up, and she's going to be there. I thought it was a little bit too predictable as far as what it was. But The Shape of Water was not, to me. It was not predictable really at all. I mean, you had a feeling that they would somehow get this fish out, but you didn't necessarily believe it the whole time. I just thought, and I think you hit on it with The Shape of Water, I just think it's a better, nothing against Spielberg, obviously, but you've got, a director for The Shape of Water who understands visuals probably even better than Spielberg does as far as that kind of film, Pan's Labyrinth and Shape of Water thing. So I thought...
Hellboy.
Well, and I think that really kind of separated it. Shape of Water may win Best Picture. I mean, that's the great thing about Best Picture is really... several of these films could win, and Shape of Water could win. To me, it's not the best picture of the year. I think it was better than Big Sick, and so therefore, to me, I think it should have been nominated as Best Picture, but I don't think it is the best picture. You saw it, Todd, right?
Yeah. To me, I think, for one thing, if they were nominating up to 10 films back when E.T. came out, E.T., I think, would have been nominated for the best picture. So I think that's one of the issues there. And it was viewed as a kids movie, and kids movies rarely are nominated even now. So
film at the time where Spielberg was not still seen as, this guy could win Best Picture. He was making entertaining films instead of great films.
Making pictures people want to see.
Exactly. That's a slight. That's true. And it shouldn't have been the case, but it was at the time.
And as far as Oscar worthy, I mean, a lot of times they have to have some, not always, but there should be some gravitas, like you said, Lee. To me, there should be some cinematic appeal to it, which obviously Shape of Water has. Big Sick doesn't. I think Big Sick absolutely accomplishes what it's meant to do. And to me, that's the biggest thing. If a movie achieves what it's supposed to achieve, if it's most supposed to make you laugh, if it's supposed to make you cry, if it's supposed to make you think about what the subject is, then it's Oscar worthy. If it does those things better than other films in other categories, and that's how you can compare films that are very different, because did it achieve what it was supposed to do? Because you can't compare Lady Bird to Shape of Water head to head and say, well, this is better because this was funny, or this was better because, it had freaking love scenes. Yeah. Did the film achieve what it was supposed to achieve? And that's what I think that's what the voters should base it on. I mean, I would think that's what we all base on, whether we like a movie or not. Did it do what it was supposed to do? So that's why I would say what makes a movie Oscar worthy. E.T. to me shouldn't have won, but it should have been nominated. It's just that it couldn't get shoehorned into that little category. And the Oscars, the nominations have changed as things have gone along. People are starting. They've added 1,000 new members in the past couple of years. So people are realizing
we'll be members at this rate.
Right? Yeah. So,
and a film like Get Out would have never been nominated before, to be honest.
Oh, my God. No, absolutely not. It wouldn't have been nominated. It probably wouldn't have been nominated if they had 10 choices back then, 10 years ago, just because it's too different. So yeah, I think it's great that it's nominated. But and it's like you said, Lee, I mean, there's so many movies this year that could win and deserve to win. but they're so different. It makes it feel like it's a small twin bed.
wanted to ask you one other thing before I let you guys get into this, because I know you guys have seen more of these than I have. Sally Hawkins is up for Best Actress.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering, has there ever been anyone who's gotten an Oscar for playing a mute, apart from that one really weird scene that I could have done without?
Yeah,
Marley Matlin.
Yes.
Won Best Actress. Okay. So
it was just something that occurred to me, and I, like 3 seconds before we started recording the show, and I went, yeah. Ooh, hang on a minute.
And deservedly so, because she was awesome. So.
Yeah.
Yes.
They both were awesome, actually. Matlin and Hawkins both.
Oh, yeah. Great roles.
I will agree, because I wouldn't have thought of someone who couldn't speak through an entire movie as being able to show as much as she did. I don't mean that in that sense, but, you know,
right.
she That's did, which saying. Was.
Yeah. Acting.
But the thing is, you know, you talk about Hawkins, and it's she didn't speak. And you have to think she didn't speak. Because she
didn't need to.
Exactly. She emoted so much physically that she did not. She didn't need to say words. Her acting, her physicality alone really kind of pushed the film forward, which is, you know, what the lead is supposed to do.
And she did a great job of it.
Yeah.
Oh, terrific.
I don't think she's not going to win best. So, no. We Three Billboards, Frances McDormand, she drives that film the whole way. The acting is phenomenal in that film, and that's why it should have been nominated for Best Picture, and was, and could win. But Frances McDormand is just, it's one of those years where I've seen Saoirse Ronan and Lady Bird, and I've seen Meryl Streep, I haven't seen Margot Robbie, and I've seen Hawkins in her role, and all those actresses were great in their roles, but McDormand just transforms the character. I think that's why she's going to win.
Was Meryl Streep great in The Post?
She's always great. I mean, she could show up in my house and be like, I'm going to just play your piano for 5 minutes. Oh, that was fantastic. I mean, she's always great.
I don't think she was great. I mean, she had one scene that was worthy of her, I think, in The Post. Other than that, there are 100
actresses. She becomes the person. A lot of people don't know that real person that she – and I thought she portrayed that person perfectly – but she also had moments of sveltness, I guess. I mean, it's Meryl Streep, you know, so she's always good. But I thought she did extremely well. And I thought she showed a vulnerable side in a time where it's like, oh, we should have these strong female characters. And she was, but she was also unsure of herself. And I think she portrayed that extremely well.
Yeah, she did. But to me, I think it's Meryl Streep. So, let's see. Who can we nominate? I'm not really sure. Oh, let's nominate Meryl Streep. I think it's just her automatic Meryl Streep nomination. She's been better in like a dozen movies, and she didn't have much to do.
This is exactly why she's not going to win Best Actress. She was still great. She wasn't the best. She didn't have the best role of the year.
She didn't.
But I think in an Oscar nominated film, there's no way you could have left her off that list.
How much does the role have to do with it?
Everything.
Yeah, yeah. In a movie like that, it does. I think.
Yeah, if you don't have lines, there's not a whole lot to. Or thinking of Sally Hawkins, she didn't have lines. But if you don't have direction, what is your character supposed to do here? If it's not in the script, there's not a whole lot you can do. I mean, you can improve it, and Meryl Streep obviously could read a grocery list. But to me, this is other than one scene, this was kind of a grocery list role for her. She didn't have enough to do. That's what I'm thinking.
Well, that could be the movie's fault, not her fault. But I thought she was great. And that's one reason I don't think the Post. I mean, it was on to me of the films I've seen. It kind of teetered on the edge of, well, maybe it shouldn't be nominated. Maybe it was nominated because it's got Streep and Tom Hanks.
It's Streep, it's Hanks. It got nominated on a pedigree purely because of that. It's not one of the best 10 movies last year. It's not one of the best 20 movies last year.
Well,
I liked it. It's good, but.
Yeah, I think it got nominated because of the times we live in, just like All the President's Men got nominated, which was a better film than The Post.
It's a much better film.
But it's the same type of film in an era when we kind of need that film to be nominated. It's not All the President's Men, but it's got enough similarities. It takes place before All the President's Men, but it's got enough similarities where I could see why it got nominated.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good movie. But, I mean, that's it. It's a good movie. Anyway. Yeah, and I agree with you as far as McDormand. I mean, she is that movie. Absolutely.
She is that movie, but Rockwell and Woody Harrelson are phenomenal in that film as well. And if you didn't have...
They are.
I mean, Rockwell's character, the acting in that film is almost as good as McDormand's. He is great in that film because he's still... Even after you see the film, you're thinking... Well, was he gay or was he not gay? I mean, that's what he brings out of the role. It wasn't, I mean, he read off the page and created that role to become even, he was phenomenal. He should win Best Supporting Actor.
And if you haven't seen Three Billboards, Rockwell plays George W. Bush as a stupid sheriff's deputy, basically.
As a sheriff's deputy. It's amazing.
Yeah, he is. He is terrific. Yeah,
the guy comes to him and says, I think a plane just got shot down over the fields nearby. And he's just like, he doesn't respond. It's phenomenal.
He just keeps reading his book about the goat. Yeah, he is. He is amazing. Absolutely agree.
Woody Harrelson was nominated in that same movie. Did you ever think we would be talking about Woody Harrelson and Oscars in the same sentence? If you go back to like Cheers.
5 years ago, yeah. 10 years ago, no. not at all. I mean,
not
it's
because
pretty amazing,
he wasn't offered the roles. He is a great actor.
He is.
It's not something that occurred to me because I'll see him in movies and go, he's really good in whatever role he's doing. And then something in the back of my head will go, Norm! And and I get dragged back there and I'm like, I'm not trying to typecast him. I'm really not. But at the same time, it's... in the back of my head going, that's Woody?
Yeah. Well, Woody. And I think you hit on it because you can't typecast him. That's how good of an actor he is because you think of him as Cheers, he's still the same actor. But I mean, he does something like in Three Billboards and then he'll do something. Well, what's the HBO show he did with Matthew McConaughey? Crap. They've had two seasons. Colin Farrell's in the second one. If you guys haven't watched that show, it's phenomenal. First season with McConaughey and Woody Harrelson.
True Detective,
yes. And they are phenomenal in that show.
Yeah, I knew what you're talking. I wasn't sure if that was the right title, but yeah, I knew what you're talking about. Yeah, he is terrific. Absolutely. I mean, he did a great job as LBJ. The script could have been better, but he was great.
All right, so moving on to actor in a leading role.
The best actor in a leading role didn't even get a nomination to me.
Uh-oh.
Just saying. Tom Cruise and the Mummy. That, oh my God, that is exactly it. You hit on it. How did you know?
Well, it's either that or Tyler Perry. I wasn't sure.
That is it. No, not really. I mean, I like the nominations that are out there. But James McAvoy didn't even get a nomination for Split. And... that to me.
I keep forgetting that that movie would be qualify in this Oscars because it was so close to last Oscar.
Well, then again, see now it's showing as 2016, so maybe that's why because I guess it came out in 2016. So I rescind my comment, but he wasn't nominated the year before anyway.
But he should have been the year before, so that counts.
Yeah, that's just outrageous to me. Anyway, best actor. I didn't see Phantom Thread. So I will turn it over to Lee for that portion, and then I'll jump in.
Daniel Day-Lewis is Jar Jar Binks.
Supposedly in Daniel Day-Lewis's last role, too, because he's supposedly retiring from acting.
Supposedly?
Yeah.
Again?
Well, this time he actually has made it, instead of just taking years off, he said it's his last role.
Ah.
A James Ivory script, actually. It was interesting because the Merchant and Ivory relationship, I think, kind of plays into the movie itself. But, I mean, all the actors that are nominated, Gary Oldman's going to win. I think we all know that from Darkest Hour. He is great. And my friend Julie, who saw the movie, she didn't actually like the way he did the role. Thought he was too, at one point thought he was too feeble. And then the next he was like, oh, I'm this great prime minister, which I can totally see where she's going with that. I think Oldman and Daniel Day-Lewis, they both transform themselves into the role so much where they're so good at their roles. It's almost like, are you watching Daniel Day-Lewis play this character? And which is the opposite of what you really see. But Gary Oldman, of the five nominees, You know, Timothy Chalamet is phenomenal in Call Me By Your Name. Just great. I mean, he's a kid and he's playing a kid, and just what he brings off the screen is phenomenal. Daniel Day-Lewis is always great. And Denzel Washington is excellent as Roman J.
Denzel
Israel.
Denzel Washington.
But he's not. If you watch the film, he's...
Well, I meant the quality-wise.
Right. Exactly, yeah. But unlike to me, Gary Oldman, Daniel Day-Lewis, can either be Denzel Washington in a film or he's not. And in this, he's totally not. He is Roman J. Israel to a T. He is the character. The movie is... to me, overtly sad, which is one reason I didn't care for the film itself. I thought Washington was great. I know Oldman's going to win, but of all the actors that I saw, I think Timothy Chalamet should win for best actor, though he won't. He's 17. He'll have many times coming up where he actually can win, but I think Oldman's going to win. Well, maybe. True.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, he could be the Dan Marino of acting. He's like, oh, I'll be back. I was like, eh, you never know.
From that year, I beat the Bears.
Quick thing. I have to bring up. They announced this week they're making a sequel to Call Me By Your Name. My only speculation is that it's going to be Call Me By Someone Else's Name. That's my joke for it, but they really are making a sequel.
Well, so if you haven't seen the film, Before Sunrise is a great film. They make them every 9 years. It's actually, have you seen it, Todd?
Yeah.
Call Me By Your
Name? No, not almost, Call Me By Your Name. I thought you meant Before Sunrise. No, I've not seen it yet.
Call Me By Your Name is almost one of those films you could see if they took time off and made it every 9 years, where it would be, you know, valid. But if they make it in like 3 years, it's almost like, I saw Silence of the Lambs, and now I'm going to see all... the film. But I mean, it's that kind of thing. You're making it to have a second one. It was kind of funny because I didn't know that. And at the end of the film, when I saw it with my friend, I was like, I can't wait till Call Me By Your Name 2. And now you mentioned it. And it was like, they shouldn't make a second one. But yeah.
Which all too often they make a second one because, hey, let's cash in.
Can they cash in on a film like that? Really?
It depends on how much it costs to make and how much it brought in. I mean, you know. Don't know. Don't care. No, I don't care. But I mean, obviously, that's what they're going to do. And I have not seen two of the nominees, so I can't speak to Chalamet's work or Daniel Day-Lewis. And obviously, I'm sure they're excellent because you said they were. Not because they're nominated, because you said they were. Oldman, yeah, I can't imagine anyone winning except Oldman. And as far as your friend's comment about, he was really weak and then he would pop back and be strong. I mean, they're condensing this time period, a matter of weeks, into 2 hours. And he did. So he suffered from depression. He suffered from serious self-doubt. I mean, so that's why he reacted that way, because, I mean, that's legitimate. Oldman is fantastic in that film. And I was glad to see that there was more to it rather than just... Because going into it, I was assuming, oh, this is just going to basically surround his response to Dunkirk, and it was much more than that. So I was just glad it wasn't, oh, this is the flip side of Dunkirk, because I saw that movie. Another Best Picture nominee. So, yeah, Oldman was excellent, beyond excellent. And he's overdue. And if it wasn't for the fact that Denzel just had a better character in Fences, and that still pisses me off that he didn't win last year. So, yeah, going back to the McAvoy wouldn't have won last year, even if he had gotten the nomination he deserved, because Denzel should have won and didn't, and that's a freaking travesty. That's like one of the worst Oscar robberies ever, because he's amazing in Fences. He's terrific in Roman J. Israel, and it's a really interesting character because he is – it's never overtly said or even suggested, but – this is a character who is definitely on the spectrum. And here's another main character in a pretty major film. And people on the spectrum are getting representation as, you know, they're not, it's not just, oh, let's look at Rain Man again. And I think that's pretty cool. Very, very cool. But Oldman wins. Hands down, Oldman wins.
Okay, so what do you guys think about actress in a leading... Well, I'm sorry, actress was Frances McDormand. Actress in a supporting role.
I have not seen two of the nominees. Mary J. Blige in Mudbound is fantastic. Octavia Spencer in The Shape of Water has nothing to do. That nomination is, I'm just dumbfounded by that. I mean, she's good with what she's got, but what does she have to do in that movie? She's the sidekick who, you know, she's along for the ride. It's like that nomination is, frankly, compared to what Laurie Metcalf does in Lady Bird or Mary J. Blige does in Mudbound, that's ridiculous. I just don't understand. Other than it's like, oh, well, you know, here we checked off the mark. Do we have enough people of that category? Well, let's make sure we nominate her. It's like, I just, Lee, did you see anything? It has nothing to do with her. Has everything to do with the role. Did you see that as any kind of a role? Is that remotely close to what Sam Rockwell brings to Three Billboards, for instance?
You mean Octavia Spencer?
Yeah.
No. Oh, no.
No.
Because she doesn't have the chance, and that's exactly what you just said.
Exactly. That's just, it's, are you kidding me? Part of what you have to nominate is the role. It's not just the, I mean, yeah, she did a great job with what she had
great.
To do.
Yeah, she's great in the film.
But there's nothing for, and it's not, I'm not talking about she needs something flashy.
Love the actress.
Does her character, is there any kind of character arc whatsoever for her? There's
other
nothing.
Other than the end with the husband, which is just, but yeah, no, I mean, she's great in the film, but right. There's no, to me, all, you know, it's like I always said, if a supporting actor is like, you have to elevate the film in your smaller role.
Mm-hmm.
And she could, she has the acting ability.
Oh, absolutely. She could, but does she? No, because it wasn't
exactly just like you said, she can't, but as you pointed out, Laurie Metcalf absolutely does.
Right.
And Leslie Manville, she it's kind of the same character as Spencer in Shape of Water. She's there, but the character doesn't really have the ability to elevate the film. But they're both great in their roles. It just doesn't have the ability to elevate, to change the film. It's really about the two leads, and it's really about the two leads. Well, it's really about the female lead in Shape of Water and Phantom Thread. It's really about the two leads. But I haven't seen I, Tonya. But from everything I understand, Allison Janney is kind of, you know, off her normal typecast. Mm-hmm. And she's great in it, and she's going to win, that's the reason I want to see I, Tonya. It's kind of funny because when I first saw the trailers for I, Tonya, I was thinking, how good can that be? And then my friend Julie saw it and thought it was great, and thought that the reason it was great was Allison Janney. So, you know, just based on third hand effect and just from what I've seen, Allison Janney's going to win, but I can't say firsthand that I actually saw the film and how great she was, but I'm sure she is. Cause she's always really good. She doesn't have the ability to show off her acting chops.
And right. And apparently in this, she really does. And I hope to get a chance to see it. And Mudbound, by the way, is extremely difficult to see. Just fire up Netflix. So Mudbound is an extremely good movie, really, really good movie, for much more than Mary J. Blige. But yeah, she's terrific in that.
Okay, so apart from best film, what other categories did you guys want to cover on the show today? Or tomorrow, even.
Or tomorrow.
Sound editing is... No, I'm just kidding.
You're so silly.
Because Star Wars is nominated. So...
Animated feature? Have any of you guys seen many of the animated features?
I've seen two of them.
I've seen three of them.
I've seen two of them.
It's probably the same two, three.
I saw The Breadwinner and Coco.
Ah.
Oh, good for you then. Coco it is.
There you go.
Coco was great. They were both great. The Breadwinner is super depressing, but for obvious reasons. But Coco was phenomenal.
And I saw The Boss Baby along with The Breadwinner and Coco.
Yeah, I saw that too.
Man, you sound ecstatic.
I did. It's not in the same category as the 5-year engagement, but I didn't like it.
In your
neither did my kids, and I think that's the important thing, because that was it's supposed to be a kids' movie, and my kids did not like it.
And you're speaking of Coco, of course. No, I know you're talking about The Boss Baby. I thought The Boss Baby
Mexicans.
Was okay, but yeah, it's silly that it's nominated. Coco is really, really good.
It is.
Haven't seen Ferdinand, and just from...
Ferdinand stars Peyton Manning, which kind of makes me go, really? Are you sure?
He's doing the voice of Mark Hamill. And I definitely want to see Loving Vincent because it's an interesting concept. And again, I would be shocked if it won because it's not the typical animated feature. I mean, it's about Vincent van Gogh, but it's all done in oil paintings, which is pretty interesting. But Coco to me is not going to stand out as one of the all-time classics, which is makes me kind of sad because I was hoping it would. I mean, I think it's easily the best animated feature I saw this year, but yeah, you mentioned our friend, Mr. Miyazaki. It's like people are not going to be talking about Coco, like with Miyazaki films, which by the way, that film festival is running again this year. So keep your eyes out for the Studio Ghibli Film Festival coming to a theater near you, hopefully wherever you are.
I hope Coco wins because one of my favorite actors, Gael Garcia Bernal, is actually one of the voices in Coco. And he's good at it.
Yes, he's very good. Yeah, it's a really good movie. I really enjoy it. It's just not, I don't think this is going to be, 50 years from now, people are going to be talking about Coco.
They're going to look at it and go, it was a lot like Monsters, Inc., only with dead people.
I mean, there are, there's a depth to the film, but yeah, I agree with you, Todd. It's not like it's not going to be life-changing film, but it's good. It's well done and it meets its point. Really good.
Oh yeah. Not knocking it at all. It's just, it's some years there are just, oh my gosh, people are going to watch this thing forever.
It's not Kubo.
And that's exactly what I was thinking. It isn't. And what's sad is probably 10 times as many people have seen Coco as Kubo and the Two Strings, but
Coco made a ton of money.
Oh yeah.
Surprise, actually.
But it's not Kubo, which Todd and I both, I think we both said it was the best film that came out last year.
Yeah.
Or I guess it would be 2 years ago now, but still. Last time we did one of these shows. let's see. Touch on the other categories real quick. Cinematography.
Thoughts?
I've seen all of them except for Mudbound. Cinematography and Darkest Hour really shouldn't be on there as far as I'm concerned. Yeah. Cinematography in Dunkirk is great. I mean, that's one reason it should be nominated for Best Picture. Just cinematography.
Give it to Blade Runner.
I like Blade Runner, but I think cinematography alone in that category, it should be Dunkirk just because of the way the film has to rely on its cinematography.
And I'd go with The Shape of Water because it has a big impact on the film. But yeah,
Dunkirk. Like you just like the pool, the bath scenes. I get it. It's totally fine. Oh, but I'm totally gonna forget to say this when we do get to Call Me by Your Name. Let me just say I can never eat another apricot.
Good to know. Good to know.
Wow. Okay.
So cinematography, we're all over the map. Rob, you didn't mention your favorite for cinematography, unless you really want Blade Runner 2.049.
I'll give it to Blade Runner just because it looked pretty. Shape of Water. I'll agree with you on that. I think it was done well enough. Considering I've only seen Blade Runner 2 of the other categories or other films in this category. No, I'm looking at a lot of these. And
can I interrupt you one second?
No.
Why is Shape of Water not listed for visual effects?
It's not. Hang on a minute. Scrolling. God, there's a lot of categories. Okay.
It's Blade Runner 2049, Guardians of the Galaxy, Kong, Skull Island, Star Wars, and War for the Planet of the Apes.
It's listed for costume design, so I guess that's what they're going with instead.
I guess because the main visual effect was that costume.
Yeah, but the film, that's really one of the things the film's based on.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm pulling for
Kong. But I guess the thing is, the rest of these are more bait. Shape of Water is based on that one costume, and the rest of it is really just period pieces, as opposed to these, which are the entire movie is almost a visual effect.
Well, I was visually affected by the bath scenes with Sally Hawkins.
Clearly.
As well you should have been, and yet.
Screenplay.
Original. What was... Well, it wasn't Logan.
No, it wasn't.
Oh, sorry.
It wouldn't be Logan. For original screenplay, we've got The Big Sick, Get Out, Lady Bird, The Shape of Water, and Three Billboards.
Tough. Well, we can't do The Shape of Water because they're being sued over it because it was copied from someone else.
Ah, we can do The Shape of Water. Yeah, and we talked about that, and that's ridiculous.
It is.
Anyway, gosh, that's really tough. I would go with Get Out because it's so original.
One reason that Phantom Thread has no reason or no ability to actually win Best Picture is because it's not nominated for original screenplay. And because Paul Thomas Anderson actually wrote the screenplay and directed the film. So if he's, they didn't respect it enough for original screenplay, it probably has no business winning Best Picture.
Aha, then, by your own argument, The Big Sick should have been nominated for Best Picture.
Yeah, it wouldn't have killed me if it was nominated. I just didn't think it got nominated.
It was going to win.
Number 9. I don't think it would be number 1 or 2 or 3.
Yeah, I'm not sure. If I would nominate. I really, really liked it, but yeah, it's not like the best picture last year. I could definitely see it being nominated, but I'm not that surprised that it wasn't either. So, really, really good movie. I mean, you just can't beat. We lost 19 of our best guys.
19. I always put 9. Yeah, 19.
Anyway, best adapted screenplay.
Not Logan.
There's your buddy Logan. Yeah, Call Me By Your Name, The Disaster Artist, Molly's Game, Mudbound, and Logan. Yeah, definitely not Logan. That's like the worst adapted screenplay because they really screwed the pooch. I mean, it's well written. It's just that they could have done things.
The original screenplay.
They could have done things with the source material that would have made it a better film. So for that reason, it's like it's a terrible job of what should have been done. Really liked Molly's Game, really liked Mudbound, didn't see The Disaster Artist. It'd be kind of funny if that won, since it's the story of one of the worst films ever made.
Which is one reason I'm surprised it didn't get nominated for Best Picture, just like, what's the Ben Affleck film that actually, did it win Best Picture?
Geely.
Argo?
Yes. Geely.
Yes, Geely.
I'm gonna vote for Mudbound on this one. I mean, it's an awesome story. It's a fascinating story. It's a great movie, too.
I feel like
I hate to say the only one out of those I've seen is Logan, and I'm not.
Adapted screenplay, they shouldn't even have a category for because they're all cheating. They just borrow somebody else's material.
Plagiarized screenplay.
There you go.
It is interesting that only one of the adapted screenplays is nominated for Best Picture.
Yeah. Very strange. Are we up to director now? I think we're up to director now, aren't we?
Sure.
Christopher Nolan for Dunkirk, Jordan Peele for Get Out, Greta Gerwig for Lady Bird, Paul Thomas Anderson for Phantom Thread. I'm surprised Edward didn't take the lead role. And Guillermo del Toro for
Shape of Water. We all know who's
going to win.
Del Toro, yeah. For Shape of Water. I think has he won every major award so far?
I believe he has.
Yeah.
Yeah, it would be an upset if he didn't win. I kind of like Jordan Peele as an outlier on this. I'm not going to say Dark Horse just because I'm not going to do it. But so much of the success of the film is the screenplay, which of course, I love Shape of Water and Del Toro definitely deserves it, but so does Gerwig and so does Peele. And Dunkirk, I have problems with the script to some extent, but the way it's filmed it is phenomenal.
Which is probably one reason it didn't get nominated for a screenplay. Yeah, I mean, the only Phantom Menace being in there is kind of weird. But I thought all the directing is all great. It's funny because Phantom Thread, again, Paul Thomas Anderson, I thought, oh, your directing's great. The movie's great, but your screenplay sucked. Because, it's like not nominated. So, yeah, it's interesting. We all know Shape of Water is going to win. But I thought they're all worthy in a different way. I mean, it's kind of funny because you have Dunkirk, Get Out, and then The Shape of Water. And it's like, how different could those movies be?
And Lady Bird, which is completely different from that. Yeah, I mean, they're just.
Lady Bird and Get Out are the same film.
Well, that's true. Totally true. Get out, Lady Bird. Get out. Sounds like a nursery rhyme.
I thought that's what it was called, wasn't it?
Get Out Late. That's right.
The working title.
From Working Title Pictures and Handmade Films. All
right. So just because we're running long on the show, Best Picture.
This is a great thing because you don't know who's going to win, right?
No.
I mean, it could be, to me, the best Shape of Water may easily win. To me, the best picture I saw was Three Billboards. The acting was phenomenal. The way it was directed, the pace of the film was phenomenal. If anybody hasn't seen it, it's not a fun watch necessarily, but they do make the whole thing post the traumatic experience of Frances McDormand's daughter being raped and brutally murdered. So you don't really get that, which to me actually makes the film even better because you're relying on that kind of source moment without showing it to build off what, and the every actor that's in that film is great. And I love watching great acting. So to me, that was the best film I saw this year. Call Me By Your Name and Phantom Thread had the same pacing, the same kind of melancholiness to it. So those two are up against each other. To me, Call Me By Your Name was better because it was emotionally more heavy. Phantom Thread was kind of cold. The Post should be number 9 as far as I'm concerned. Lady Bird, Get Out, as much as I joked about how they were a lot alike, they do have the same kind of feel to it in a way. You know, does that make any sense? I mean, because they both want to prove a point beyond your normal points that you would see in a film. Lady Bird was great. Lady Bird was probably closer to Three Billboards. If I had a vote, Lady Bird would be number 2. Dunkirk was much better than Darkest Hour. Darkest Hour shouldn't have been nominated as far as I'm concerned because it was really Gary Oldman's film, and I thought the rest of the film was just nowhere near Dunkirk. So if I had a vote to sum up, Three Billboards would be number 1, Lady Bird would be number 2, and Shape of Water followed by Call Me By Your Name, which of course means Darkest Hour is going to win Best Picture.
And
no, it'll be The Post.
I've got your same top 3, but I would put Shape of Water as the winner, and then Three Billboards, and then Lady Bird, and I would my 4th would be Get Out. You know, I was not blown away by Get Out as almost. I think it's a really, really good film. I don't think it's like one of the greatest films ever, which a lot of people feel. And I understand makes a really important statement, but to me, it's not like one of the great films of all time, and that's not necessary to win Best Picture, obviously, because God knows there've been plenty of Best Picture winners that people hardly, I mean, like, when's the last time you watched The Hurt Locker? God, I love that movie.
Actually,
and it's a really good movie.
I saw Hurt Locker was as a moment of Hedwig and the Angry Inch on Broadway when they're making fun of The Hurt Locker. And that's not a joke.
And it's a good movie, but there's no way it should have won. To me, The Shape of Water is just more cinematic, and that's not necessarily doesn't necessarily have to be a prerequisite to win. I would not be upset at all if Three Billboards win or if Lady Bird wins. Upset, that's kind of silly. But yeah, I agree with you on Darkest Hour and Dunkirk. Darkest Hour shouldn't be nominated. I mean, it's a really good movie, but it's not one of the 10 best movies. And again, Baby Driver really is the best movie last year, and it's not even nominated for a damn thing, but that's the best movie last year, and it should have won. But I'll go with The Shape of Water.
Which is exactly why Moonlight's going to win this year as well.
They need to make that joke.
Oh.
And the winner is Moonlight.
Oh, Jimmy Kimmel's hosting, you know. I mean, there'll be several references, I'm sure.
As long as he doesn't have that. What was it? I don't normally watch the awards, but my wife made me turn them on last year just to watch the, there's a tour bus outside and they'd like to come in and say hi to people. What the hell was that?
Well, the problem is, you apparently you've not kept up with it, but the Oscars run kind of short and they needed to pad it out. So
then let people finish their speeches,
which is exactly why Stephen Wright should host the Oscars.
I'm good with that. I would
30 him 37 minutes
co-hosting Stephen Wright and Ben Stein.
Oh my God.
I think that would work.
Stephen Wright hosts the Oscars. Wow.
Just for the musical interlude alone.
Wow. That seems to be about all the time we've got for this show this week. I know we had another subject. We're going to do that next week though, which is who has never been nominated for an Oscar, but should have been. which will be fun. It'll give us another more time to think about that because
Stephen Wright.
So many people like Stephen Wright have never been nominated and should have been, because there's a lot of the list is bigger than I had thought.
Rob Steele.
I was nominated for three. Thank you very much for that. What was it? The Rush mockumentary. Yeah,
he was the Geddy Lee actor. He played the Geddy.
I was Neil Peart. Thank you very much. Anyway, he played
Charlie Watts. It was phenomenal.
It was
excellent. With Mark Hamill doing the voice.
Matt Ryan. Anyway, we'll get it right eventually. That's enough for us. Go watch your Oscars and hope that somebody you like wins. Because if they don't, then your Monday is going to be completely... It's a Monday. Get over it. We'll see you next week.
Captain, we're losing power on the warp engines.
I think we should be leaving now.
I'm going to go home and sleep with my wife.
And on that unusually harmonious bombshell, it is time to end.
I am very disappointed!
Man, we have a weird job.
It's shameful, but it's a living.
And like that, he's gone.
Darn, that's the end.